Welcome to Geared Up, brought to you by National Car Rental. I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Andrew Edwards.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We've got a big show coming up, including a discussion of the secret formula behind the Amazon's Choice label.
Which you uncovered.
Finally being revealed by Amazon. We found it, and we're going to talk to you about it later on in the show. Plus, some surprising stats about Apple's HomePod, which, depending on how you define it, is either an Amazon Echo competitor or not.
Right. Yeah, I think that's part of the problem.
We can debate that. Plus, a new subscription service from Apple News. And if we have time, we're going to talk about the Xbox One and the status of the backward compatibility program.
Right. Well, now that we've said it, we have to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Hey, before we jump in, though, Andrew, I've got a surprise.
Okay.
Look what I finally bought.
Whoa!
I finally got my AirPods. I know this has been a long time campaign on your part.
Yes, man.
I love them. They have totally changed. In fact, I'm going to wear them the entire show. They have totally changed how I listen to music, the frequency of my listening, just the entire situation. I love them. I have not lost them yet, but I will tell you.
You're never going to.
The ultimatum for my wife was, if you lose them, you are not buying another pair.
Did you agree to that?
I agreed to that.
You agreed to it. Why? Well, see, all you
second,
have to do is not
second.
Agree.
I don't know that there's any agreeing or disagreeing with an ultimatum from your spouse.
All I'm saying is if she says it and you don't say anything back, then technically you have not agreed to the ultimatum.
I will say that for all the reasons that you love the AirPods,
yes,
I love them.
I wish I'd gotten them sooner.
Right
here. I always keep them in the little jeans pocket because they fit in that little pocket that you never use ever. That's the AirPods pocket.
You know why I got them? I was on vacation in Phoenix and the resort where we were staying had a basketball court. I love to shoot hoops just on my own.
Did not know this.
My knees are not good enough for actual one-on-one.
Can you dunk?
Not anymore.
You used to? I've never dunked in my life.
Maybe on like a 9.5 foot rim, there was a point when I was maybe 16 and a half years old that yes, I could dunk. I would not call myself, I've got a great baseline shot. I got a great baseline jumper, but long ago my knees gave out on me. I had ACL, all that stuff. Anyway, I love to shoot. And so the problem is you don't want to wear your iPhone X in your iPhone 10 in your pocket while you're shooting hoops. So I was like, I finally got to get the AirPods. So I went. And I got my AirPods while I was on vacation and changed the whole experience.
I told you.
Shooting hoops.
See, people focus on the sound quality, which they're not the best sound quality in the world, but they sound fine. But there's no better convenience factor than what Apple's done with the AirPods.
That's right.
So that's just it. You open them up, they're connected, you put them in, you listen.
All right. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
That's not even part of the show.
Once again, a big thanks to National Car Rental for sponsoring Geared Up. All right, let's jump in with our first story.
What's the first story?
Andrew, how often do you shop on Amazon?
I would say at a minimum every other day.
So do you ever notice or even look for the little label that says Amazon's Choice among the various products in a certain category that you're looking for?
I don't look for it, but I've definitely seen it.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's like, hey, this is great. And sometimes it's like, that may be your choice, but that's not what I'm looking for.
Exactly. Okay. Well, for me, someone who's less informed, and I think for the rest of the population, unlike an actual product reviewer that I have sitting next to me, I actually look to it quite a bit.
Really?
And it influences my buying decisions.
Okay.
And the thing about Amazon's Choice, though, was previously, Amazon would not tell you why it was choosing a particular product as its choice. It was actually a big mystery. They told you generally that in products with low return rates and fast shipping, those were two of the criteria they used. But on an individual product, and not in any detail, did they give you any kind of indication about why they were choosing it.
Okay, so let's back up a second. So Amazon's Choice is you search for a product, they give you search results, and one of them is Amazon's Choice?
Yep,
is
it's basically correct? Amazon giving its blessing to a particular product and saying, hey.
Based on a search, though?
If you go to the product page as well, it has it right there. It says, this is Amazon's Choice. So it's basically like a confidence builder. Like, we think that if you buy this product, you'll like it. That's the implication, at least.
Fair enough.
In the past, though, you had no idea why they were doing it. Now, just over the past week, they have started revealing very specific information about why they choose the products they choose.
Okay.
For example, an Acer Predator gaming laptop.
Okay.
The reason that is an Amazon's Choice is that it has, one, a low return rate, 28% fewer returns than similar products, Two, it's highly rated, 4.1 stars with over 1,100 reviews. And three, it's a popular item, popular with customers searching for, quote, gaming laptop.
Okay.
So those are just a few of the criteria. What's interesting here to me is your line of work could be in jeopardy. What if the algorithms collectively become smarter than the individual product reviewers reviewing a product?
Not happening. Not happening. I'll tell you why. I mean, first of all, this sounds like, not that this is a negative thing, but it sounds like it's helping you in a way, but it's also very helpful to Amazon to sell things that are not going to get returned to them because they don't have to deal with two-way shipping. They don't have to deal with restocking. They don't have to deal with, you've already opened it, now we're selling it as a refurb or whatever. So it's helping you in a way, but it's also self-serving in a way.
Absolutely.
Right? When you base it on reviews, we've heard the problem. A lot of these reviews get gamed. A lot of companies will pay people to either just put in positive reviews or they'll send out free products with the understanding that, hey, review it in your own voice, but if you want to get more, it better be a good one. So there's a couple, some of these, and I don't know if there's other signals that they use and that they reveal.
There are four main ones that we were able to find. And by the way, GeekWire broke this story. We were able to break it, and then CNET and others followed us.
You, sir, found this.
Yeah, so it's a small thing, but it has been a big mystery that a lot of people have covered because it's kind of part of the secret sauce.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's part of the e-commerce landscape. But to your point, one of the other criteria is whether it's eligible for free Prime shipping, which obviously also plays into Amazon's business interest.
Yes.
You could say it's also in the interest of the consumer, the person buying it, if he or she is a Prime member.
Yes, but in that instance, that does not inform the quality of the product at all. Just how fast I can have it delivered.
Right, but that then does make it one of Amazon's choices.
Yes, true.
So that is interesting. To me, what's interesting is all of it is quantifiable in one way or another. So
Right. It's
taking the qualitative nature out of the reviews, basically saying an algorithm, a formula, can determine whether this product is something that you're going to like.
Right.
I would be really curious to hear what people out there think. People in Geared Up Nation, when you go...
Geared Up Nation, we have a question for you.
When you go with an Amazon Choice product, and when you've done that in the past, is it something that's actually been something you've liked? For me, the answer has been yes. I've heard people say no, that for them, they like to do a deep dive into the reviews, the comments.
Sure. I am more of someone who, I want what I want rather than what will just accomplish the task, I guess. So if I'm looking for a gaming laptop, for example, and they recommend that one, I know that while that may be suitable for me, I really want something with, let's just say, 32 gigs of RAM.
Right.
Or with this specific graphics card because I want to use it for VR or something like that. Rather than, you know, here's 10 that would do the job, but here's the one that we think you won't return. That's not good enough for me, at least when it comes to tech.
And I will say that I still give much higher value to word of mouth. I'll give you an example. You connected us with a great live streaming guru, David Foster
at Geeks Foster. Life. Shout out to David Foster at Geeks Life.
So he recommended a high-end computer for us. We've got it sitting right over there awaiting the arrival of our
The fiber connection.
Yes.
If you're waiting for the live streams to return, they are coming back. We did not stop those. We're just waiting for the fiber to arrive in this office.
So I basically bought exactly what he told me to buy. And it was basically David Foster's choice.
Right.
So I value that what a friend or actually an expert would tell me more than I would Amazon's choice.
Yes. But you know what? Like, now that I'm thinking about it, when it comes to tech, I know what I want. But if I was searching for...
clothes?
I don't know. I know what I want when it comes to clothes. But if I'm searching for, I don't know, linen or like kitchen stuff...
How about a new car? No, that would qualify as tech.
That's correct. But, you know, household stuff, I probably would.
New flooring?
Oh, God, don't get me started. I'm in the middle. If you've watched my Instagram, I'm in the middle of new flooring hell right now.
All right. So that's the secret formula
that's
revealed.
Cool. That
it's
is cool.
Like it's right up there with the KFC original recipe. It's right, Amazon's right. Secret formula.
I want you to, at least once a month, reveal something new about Amazon's how they work internally.
The formula?
Yes.
I would do my best.
I want to do that.
Once a month, that's not enough.
Is that?
Yeah. All right, so that is story number one.
Yes.
Amazon's choice formula revealed. Story number two, Apple's HomePod.
Yes.
Remind us,
I love
Andrew,
the HomePod.
So you've got it?
I have a couple.
For two?
I have two.
For people who don't know what the HomePod is, remind us.
All right, so Apple's HomePod is Apple's, basically, the easiest way to describe it is it's their Apple Music speaker. So it's a standalone speaker. It's about as tall as a soda can. It's actually not that big, but it
really?
Is. Yeah,
it looks
not
in
that
the pictures
large.
Like it's way bigger.
I know. It fits in the palm of your hand. It's about as tall as a soda can, but it is fairly thick.
$350.
$350. It works with Siri, so you can talk to it to request things. The Siri functionality is fairly basic in that it can do home automation stuff. It can, obviously, it's optimized for Apple Music, and it can answer, you know, the trivia of how big is a blue whale or whatever it is you want to ask it.
But it's certainly not on the level of the sophistication.
Correct.
Of the Echo or Alexa or even
Google Assistant.
Yep.
Cortana.
It's
really? Probably
really?
Cortana's really good, just no one uses it. Cortana's really good. No, so the problem here is the HomePod is not selling as well as probably Apple would like. And the report from Bloomberg,
Mark Gurman. The weekly Mark Gurman.
Yes,
scoop.
He says that some Apple stores are actually selling single digits per day. So not even selling 10 HomePods per day, which is actually, in the grand scheme of things, for an Apple store, that's a very small amount because Apple stores are very high traffic. They are the best-selling retail per square foot in the world. And the HomePod is a new product. So anything new, like they're probably selling 10 iPods a day. When's the last time Apple updated the iPod? Like those are fairly old. So, you know, it's interesting because the HomePod as a product, Apple started manufacturing, or not manufacturing, they started planning it 5 years ago. Before the original Echo, I believe, was even released 5 years ago. And their idea was that they were going to make the best music speaker that they could make. And they did. It sounds phenomenal. It's a fantastic speaker. If you compare it to other speakers in the same price, it sounds better than those speakers.
If I understand correctly, it adapts to the shape of your room.
Not only that, yes. Though if you pick it up, there is a gyroscope inside. So if you pick it up, it knows it's been moved. It will re-scan the room. It knows where it is in the room. It knows if you have another HomePod in the room, they both know where they are in the room and where they are in relation to each other. And it'll optimize the bass, the treble, the mids, the highs, the lows, everything based on where it's been placed and what's around it. Is there where's the corner? Where's the flat surfaces? Everything. The problem, I think, is that despite it being a better speaker than, let's just say, the $400 Google Home Max as it pertains to playing music, it's nowhere near as good at answering questions or requests. So what we're finding is it seems that people are willing to pay more for functionality than they are sound quality. And Apple really focus on sound quality and not the smart functionality here.
I really think that this is another classic example of Apple being Apple, where they've got a great idea. They're singularly focused on bringing this to market as a speaker, as a high-end music speaker.
Right.
And if you look at the way the Mac rolled out, I mean, it was designed initially largely to appeal to people who with a flair for graphic design and doing, you know, initial layout.
Yeah.
And I think that this is very similar. I think there's a good chance that Apple with the HomePod could end up with 5% of the market, and just like they have of the personal computer
That's
market.
Crazy. I mean, well, here, I mean.
Because, I mean, the number of people who want that high-end audio experience
right.
is naturally smaller
Correct.
Than the people who want basic functionality. And I really think that the analogy is very similar to the PC market.
Here's the thing. So
the personal computer market, not the Windows
yes.
PC market.
Apple is number two in the home audio streaming market. Spotify's number one. And Apple's number two. Apple has 40 million paying customers now. I believe Spotify has around 75 or 80 million. So in about 2.5 years, Apple's got to half of the market share of Spotify. 40 million people don't have a speaker that will play Apple Music because none of the others, like Sonos or Google Home Max or any of them, None of them can you ask with your voice to control Apple Music. You can control it through an app by Bluetoothing or, you know, Sonos through the Sonos app, but there's nothing but the HomePod that will let you just speak your command. But again, it seems like Apple was too narrow focused because...
And too expensive.
And that's the thing. So the expense is expensive. $350 is expensive, but compared to other speakers' sound quality, it's not, because it's in the same ballpark, but sounds better than even more expensive speakers. It's the fact that it's not, I don't even know what people are expecting it to do, quite honestly, because if I ask it to lock my front door, it'll lock my front door. If I ask it to raise or lower the blinds, it'll do that. Change the temperature of my home, it'll do that. What is it that it's not doing?
Well, so are there things that you can do on an Echo that you can't do?
Yes. There's
for example,
plenty of,
like what?
So this goes back to the developer stuff, though, right? Because Amazon's Alexa platform is so open that anyone can tie anything to it. And that's probably what it is. There are things you can ask Alexa to do with your devices that the HomePod can't just because it doesn't connect to HomeKit.
It does not connect to HomeKit.
The HomePod does, but there are more devices that support Alexa than there are that support HomeKit.
Right.
So therefore, your $50 or $30 Amazon Echo Dot can do more in your home than your $350 HomePod.
Here's my favorite latest Alexa example. Have you heard of the show Chompers?
I have not heard of the show Chompers.
So Chompers is a daily toothbrushing show.
What?
Where you can play it either as a podcast or on your Alexa, and it's entertainment for your kids that guides them through the recommended 2 minutes
serious?
Of brushing every day. It is magic.
This
I recommend
fantastic.
It to everybody. It's wonderfully produced. It's put out by Gimlet, the company that's does startup and other things.
You listen to it while you brush your teeth, though.
You and your kids.
Well,
when my daughter's brushing her teeth, I do that too. But it's great. But the thing is, on Alexa, it keeps score for you. So it knows when you've come back and how many days you've come back to do your recommended 2 minutes of brushing. So to me, like, that's what I want in a smart speaker.
And all you need is a $30 Echo Dot to get that experience, right?
We happen to use the Echo Show.
You can use more if you want to, but
$30 at discount. I mean,
right.
I think it's
50 bucks.
Price. Yeah,
right, 50 bucks. But still, what I'm saying is you can get that function, that basic functionality, if you want to by paying $50.
Okay.
And with Apple, you have to pay $350.
Bottom line on this HomePod story, Mark Gurman from Bloomberg Technology is reporting that during the HomePod's first 10 weeks of sales, it was just 10% of the smart speaker market. Amazon Echo, Don't Look, had how much do you guess? How much do you guess the Echo had during that same period?
I'm going to say Google had to have some of that as well.
Yep.
So I'm going to give Google 5% because it wasn't launching something new.
Really? Wow. You're a hater.
No, I'm just I'm
you're
quantifying
way off.
Why.
Let me tell you, you're
really?
Way off.
Really? Because I was going to say that
so
Amazon
Google had more than an Apple.
Okay.
Not
so
much more.
I'll give Google 15%.
Yep, 14, close enough.
Okay. So then what's 80?
Amazon had 73.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and that's a Windows, Mac
and that is
spread.
At launch.
At launch, exactly.
That's not good.
Yeah.
That's not good.
All right, so that's the HomePod. We will link to that story from the show notes.
Yes.
From the Geared Up podcast.
The rumor, though, is Apple will be releasing a cheaper HomePod in the future.
Okay.
Which is not a game Apple typically plays.
I still think they just got to boost the third-party ecosystem, playback to the Windows days, because
correct.
That was the virtuous correct. Cycle that Microsoft spun up that made Windows.
Come on, Tim.
All right. We will be right back on Geared Up talking about more Apple news. In fact, Apple news will be the topic coming up. That's next.
This GeekWire podcast is sponsored in part by Fred Hutch Obliteride, a fundraising bike ride and 5K walk to raise millions of dollars with the goal of curing cancer faster. Scenic routes for all levels of riders include 25-mile, 50-mile, and 100-mile rides, plus a 5K walk. Be a superhero and invest in Fred Hutch scientists to end cancer once and for all. Obliteride takes place August 11th. Registration and info at obliteride.org.
Welcome back to Geared Up. It is time for the National Car Rental Story of the Week.
Yes, big shout out to National Car Rental for sponsoring Geared Up. Go National, Go Like a Pro. I also do a show called Technically Speaking for National Car Rental as well. You visited me on the set last time.
It was fun. A lot of fun. And you can find that at nationalcar.com at the control center. Also at youtube.com/nationalcarrent. This is where Andrew gives you all the inside tips and tricks for travelers.
Yeah, so if you're traveling, whether it's business travel or personal travel, I basically break down all the best tech that you should take with you on your travels to make life a little bit easier.
Awesome. So you can find that show. And this is the National Car Rental Story of the Week.
Yes, let's get into it. What is the story?
So Apple is coming out, rumors say.
Yes.
Rumors are always talking.
That's right. I mean, especially when it's Apple, there's a lot of rumors.
With its own subscription news service,
right,
which ties into a story we had a few weeks ago.
Yes, we talked about this.
About an acquisition that Apple made. Right. Tell us about this story.
Apple acquired a company called Texture, which was an app that allowed you to pay, I believe it was $10 a month, and you got to read an unlimited number of magazines. And it's the magazines you'd find in any grocery store or anything like that. So Wired Magazine or Good Housekeeping. Really, I don't know why I picked those two, but any magazine in the U.S. that you could think of was pretty much a part of this.
Because you're redoing your floors.
That's right, Good Housekeeping. So Texture, $10 a month, read all the magazines you want. So it's basically the Netflix of magazines. Apple bought this company, and apparently about 20 people were laid off, but the rest of the team was integrated into the Apple News team. And Apple News, if you don't know, is an app on the iPad and iPhone that ships as part of iOS where you can read, you know, the news that interests you. And it's kind of like Apple Music in a way where as you read your news, you can hit the like button on stories that you like and dislike, and it'll start to kind of tailor the news to you, pulling from all different, you know, websites and newspapers to kind of make your own personalized magazine or newspaper for the news. So that's what Apple News does today. And the rumor is that in the next version of iOS, they'll be announcing as part of that a $10 per month subscription, all you can eat news service.
And so the idea would be to leverage that Texture magazine portfolio. Mm-hmm. So basically they're adapting Texture to the Apple News.
Right,
app,
right.
And putting it in there.
Yes, but what we don't know, so there's some questions here, because Apple News as it stands isn't, there's no magazines in there unless the magazines have a web version. So it would have the magazines, but what about things like the New York Times or the Post where you have to pay them anyway? If you want to read the New York Times online, you have to have a subscription. Will that $10 per month cover everything, and then will Apple keep a portion and then dole it out to the publishers based on how many articles get read, or, you know, how does that work? Because it's similar to the music industry. You pay Apple Music $10 a month or Spotify or whoever, and on the back end, they keep a portion of it, but then they have to figure out how many times this song was played and what that means as far as your $9.99 and how that all gets doled out. Are they going to try to save the publishing industry through this?
And this is something that Apple's tried before. They had an app called Newsstand, I believe, in the past.
Yes, they
that did something similar. So this would not be a first attempt by Apple. The thing that I like about the Apple News app on the iPhone in particular is I get at least a sampling of stuff that I would otherwise have to pay for. Now, in my case, I happen to also pay for subscriptions to the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and all these other things through work. So I have access to that material, but I still find myself going to the Apple News app because I get a breadth of content, not just from one particular publisher. And then it's basically like my front door to the subscription content that I also subscribe.
Do you find that Apple News tailors itself to you?
It feels like it, for sure.
Yeah. So that, I assume, makes it more, you know, you'd rather go to something that's for you than just opening the New York Times app and just seeing whatever the deluge of the day is, right?
Absolutely. There's something to be said for personalization. Also, this is an interesting example of the freemium model if they go this route, where you would have the news that would be sort of the commodity that would bring you in for free, and then you'd say, oh, I really want to go deep on this particular subject, so I'm going to subscribe to the $10 a month and have access to all these different things. Apple and Amazon are somewhat competitors in this realm. You've got these two content subscriptions, you know, Amazon with some of their Kindle programs that you get the Prime Reading. I mean, it's interesting. One of the fascinating things that came out of the Facebook hearings for me was just all of the different businesses that Facebook is in. And then here you look at this as another example. I mean, Apple is known as the iPhone and iPad
right.
and Mac maker and maybe the HomePod maker.
maybe, eventually.
Apple TV and all that stuff. But here you have a good example where their services business is actually becoming
absolutely
a big part of the company.
Right. I'm curious, though, how many people want to pay for news? How many people want to pay for news?
I think the answer to that question has changed for a couple reasons over the last 2 years.
2 years, really?
Yes. Okay. Year or 2 years. I think, first off, I think with the deluge of information on Twitter and Facebook and social media, there has come to be a new appreciation for single dedicated sources of news. Now, I don't think this is the majority of readers, but I think there's an increase in the number of people who appreciate curated single sources of news and high quality news like you would get from something you would pay for.
Right.
I also think that with just essentially the deluge of fake news and all that stuff, I think it's something that people have started to pay for. And I think there is a certain altruistic bent among news subscribers where they feel like this is one way to support democracy, to pay for something that, yes, you could get it for free. You could use your incognito window and you could get it for free. But from a practical and altruistic standpoint, it's just better to actually support it, almost like a public radio model.
Okay.
That's my take. I don't think it's the majority of the audience, but I think
it's
greater now than it was a couple years ago.
That does make sense. But there's also the whole thing of everything is $10 a month now.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
Your Apple Music or
Netflix.
Your Spotify, your Netflix, your Hulu, like everything is $10 a month. Like there was a day in the past where you would pay $100 a month for cable and you were like, I wish I could just pay for what I want.
Pay for ESPN, which is another thing
that
you're paying for.
$6 a month
yeah,
now?
Exactly.
So now you can cut the cord, but you have to pay for your internet. Then you have to pay your $10 for Netflix, $10 for Hulu, $10 for music, $10 for news, $8 for ESPN. And all of a sudden, you're saying to yourself, I wish I didn't have all these services. I wish there was one service that would just have it all for $100 a month, which would be the old school cable. I don't know that, you know, people really are way more willing to pay for entertainment
than for news.
Like to escape than to stay in reality. I don't know. We'll see. But it's at least interesting to see Apple trying to be, I think it's exactly what you said. Apple is trying to be this, you know, we're all about privacy. We're all about like upholding these values. And I think news is one of those things that they've tried and failed in the past with the Newsstand app that they want to keep, you know, available and make valuable to the owners of iOS devices, which we've seen people who own iOS devices are more likely to buy apps and buy subscriptions than Android counterparts.
Yep. All right. So that is the rumor, at least, that Apple is planning to come out with its own subscription news service as part of the Apple News app, leveraging the Texture app acquisition, the magazine subscription service. So likely it will be $10 a month, but none of this is confirmed.
Yeah. But if it happens, we'll probably see it at WWDC.
When's
as
that
part
coming
of
out?
iOS June? 12. WWDC is in early June.
Good deal. So that is the National Car Rental Story of the Week. Let's move on to our final story of the week.
All right.
The Xbox.
One of my favorite consoles out there.
So do you know the most popular story ever written on GeekWire, Andrew? Pop quiz.
How old is GeekWire?
What would the topic be? The GeekWire is 7 years old. We were founded in March of 2011.
Okay, so in the past 7 years.
Yes, the most popular story. And I will say that there is a reason I'm bringing it up in this segment.
Okay.
Not a total non sequitur.
All right, well then it must be something related to Xbox. Yes. I was going to say something about Amazon. It's like some crazy Amazon or Microsoft story.
No, it is, yes you can, how to play Xbox 360 games on your Xbox One.
What?
The most popular story ever.
Most popular means most read.
Most read, yes.
Really?
And it still shows up in the top. In fact, it's a running joke around the office. The reason it was the most popular, Taylor Soper, I have to take credit for the headline. Credit or blame.
Okay.
This was back when it was not yet possible to get backwards compatible games on the Xbox One. This was on the Xbox One launch. It was probably one of the stories that I regret most about GeekWire because the answer to the question of how to play games, Xbox 360 games on your Xbox One at the time,
yeah,
was to take an HDMI cord and plug it from your Xbox 360 into your Xbox One. We did. Well, Microsoft was actually talking about this at the time as an actual solution for people.
That's hilarious. So, wait, they recommended this?
When we asked them, hey, what about backward compatibility? I don't know if they were pulling our leg or what, but you actually could just take an HDMI cord from the 360 to the One, and you were good. And so
we
were not trying to do clickbait.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of naively did, but in hindsight, it was probably not.
No, it's fine.
At any rate, 3 years ago, as you know, Andrew, Microsoft actually came out with true backward compatibility, where you could take games from your Xbox 360 and later from your original Xbox.
Yes, that's just recently.
Yeah.
But when they announced 3 years ago, the Xbox 360 portion, the people on the PlayStation side laughed at them.
Yes.
Saying your way to attack us is to play old games?
Exactly.
We're giving you new games, and you're trying to play old games, and they thought it would backfire.
And I still think that is a reasonable knock on the Xbox One. If you look at exclusive titles.
Yes, absolutely.
That is something that the Xbox One does not do as well as some of the others, but backward compatibility has in some ways saved them.
Reinvigorated their business. Well, you know, it's interesting because none of the other current generation consoles, PlayStation 4 or Nintendo Switch, allow you to play your back catalog of games. And some people will say, well, who cares? Because you want to play all the new stuff. But they're not ashamed to put old titles in the digital catalog and have you rebuy them on PlayStation, or especially Nintendo is notorious for this. They will release, you know, at some point for Nintendo Switch, they will release a digital download of, let's just say, Super Mario Brothers 3, which is 35 years old, and charge you $8 for it. Rather than, you know, seeing you already bought it on the Wii U 3 years ago and tying it to your account. So Nintendo will keep selling you the same game over and over. So Microsoft is saying, hey, there's a lot of great games in the past. Xbox 360's game catalog was one of the best in history. You can play these games. And all you need is the disc. And if you put the disc in the console, we'll download a digital copy of the game and you can play it. If you owned a digital copy, we'll just make it available to download. And it's smart because it makes you feel like there's value. And it also, to me, says whenever the next Xbox comes out, whatever it might be, it will be compatible with Xbox One games because they value that.
No, it's not every single Xbox 360 game. But the interesting thing is they've been rolling it out, and they do it via this emulation technology where they're essentially creating an environment that the game can run in, even though it was originally written for the older console. But the whole idea is that they've done this over time. And the reason we're talking about it now is GeekWire and one of our contributors, Thomas Wild, looked at this and said, okay, it's been 3 years, almost 3 years since they announced this. So where are they? And basically they're up to 500 total titles, approximately, that you can play on the Xbox One from older generations.
Wow.
They just announced the latest 19. And it really is something. It's in many ways been the saving grace of the Xbox One. I mean, you could argue that maybe the Xbox One X and the high dynamic range and all that stuff is, but that's pretty, that's kind of like the HomePod.
That's for the techies. Like if you're just an average person going to pick up an Xbox One today, you're going to get the S versus the X.
Yes.
Like the X is really for the hardcores, which is not the majority of the audience.
But here's a good example, and obviously this person is biased, Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox.
Of course, okay.
But I think this example is realistic. He was talking about Red Dead Redemption.
Yes.
Have you played that game?
I have played that game.
Good game.
It's one of the best games of all time for Xbox 360.
So he started it on the Xbox 360. He still had his cloud save from 2011, so essentially saving his progress. He completed the middle section via backward compatibility on the Xbox One S over the summer, and then he completed the final story mission on 4K on the Xbox One X today. And so basically this backward compatibility enabled this really fascinating cross-generational gameplay.
Thanks to the cloud save. And the other thing is that you mentioned, which we should also point out, they have been, when they release Xbox 360 and even original Xbox games, some of them are remastered for the Xbox One X. So you can play those older games that were available in 720p in 4K, in true 4K.
So would you go out when something's released for backward compatibility and try and find it at a used game store?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Would you recommend it?
I think what I would do, because it's not like they're... A used game store is always going to give you probably a better deal. But if it was me, I would just go and look, because you can go into the digital store on the Xbox itself and see all the backwards compatible titles there. And the cool thing is, they make them readily available to download if you ever owned them in the past. So I can actually go in and it'll show like there's a, like it's like a notification badge. And it'll, if you look at ready to install, it'll be like there's 14 games ready to install. And you're like, what are these? And you tap on it. It's like there's 14 games that I used to own, you know, 8 or 10 years ago that I can just download right now and just play immediately. That's really cool.
How much realistically, how much time would you spend playing old games?
It depends on the game. So for example, something like, Halo 3 or something, which is a classic that you can still to this day enjoy, especially because as online gaming has gotten more and more popular, the last Halo, there's no way to play multiplayer on one TV. You have to play against someone on another Xbox, which was a huge uproar because one of the big things about Halo is you have three other friends and you're all split screen playing together.
It goes back to the original days of the LAN party, right?
Right. I mean, that is what Halo is. But now you can just download Halo 3. Its graphics are upgraded, and you can play with your friends on your new Xbox rather than having to lug out or find older hardware. Like, to me, that is where, or something like Red Dead Redemption. If you never finished it, they just announced Red Dead 2, which is like 10 years apart. So now, if you're looking forward to Red Dead 2 and you never finished that last one, you don't have to go find old hardware.
It's just like watching the original Roseanne before you get into the new one.
That's exactly what it's like. That is literally exactly what it's like, and that's what they were going for.
All right, so it's a good story. I got to say, the comment thread on this story, this might have been
the old
case.
One or the
no,
new
the
one?
No, the new one.
Okay.
The new one. We're up to 192 comments.
I will
say, this may have been more of my headline, because the headline on this one is, 3 years later, Microsoft's bet on Xbox One backward compatible games is still paying off. So it's no, yes, you can.
No.
But
correct.
It is
correct.
Still paying off. But that is a potentially controversial declaratory statement, however, which is a good tactic to take with a headline.
I know. You're better at that than I am. Like, I always just like write a factual headline.
Well, that's, yeah.
No, but like I don't have the way of thinking of how to make it more alluring.
It's got an angle to it.
Yeah, exactly. I like it.
All right. Hey, that is geared up for this week. Anything else you want to talk about?
That's it. That's it.
No chompers. I'm putting my AirPods back in
chompers.
and I'm not talking anymore.
All right, good.
All right, until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Andrew Edwards.
And don't forget to subscribe to Geared Up wherever you get your podcasts. And that's it. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to Geared Up, the weekly tech and gadget podcast. Check out more of Andrew's reviews at youtube.com/gearlive and follow all of our coverage at geekwire.com.